Now, just the next question is, would there become a time when he needs a compost tea with a not as high fungal count?
Definitely. I think a higher bacteria count may, as time progresses and we get more professional understanding, perhaps the different conditions of the soil, we will need to produce a higher bacteria tea. Some people believe by feeding the bacteria that you're actually encouraging fungal growth anyway. So, and to do that, we have played around a bit with adding more sugar to the compost tea, white sugar, and less aloe vera in our ingredients. So,
That's good, Scott. I'd like to go to see how the results are going.
I'd also consider using a different compost. I think the vermicast is terrific and has a high fungal ability. And but I think when we were using Earthmakers compost from up at Lismore, New South Wales, we were probably getting more of a bacterial count and rather than the high fungal tea that we get with vermicast, Davos vermicast.
John, the last question, which you pretty well have answered, it was the last question, this is from the settlers, is has John halved his trials he has start again. Has John halved his trial he has participated in? Oh no, that's a trial that you haven't what's the result? Can you explain that trial that you've done with that group? And
It's going to be quite interesting, actually. It will be harvested probably in January, looking at it. But the trial's over at a demonstration farm here in Clunes, and we're going head-to-head, I guess, with other teams that include bankers and agronomists and different groups. And one of our group has a more of a I won't say organic, but a biological flavour to it. And one of our group members is a biodynamic farmer. So we deep ripped the ground, applied compost tea as a seed treatment, sowed it, applied some compost tea there on emergence, put some EcoMin, which is like a rock dust, mineral fertiliser. Combination of rock dust, there you go, and then applied a foliar compost tea in spring, and whilst it sounds like a few inputs, the agronomist had a lot more, I can assure you of that, combined with, spraying for fungal diseases and so forth, which we certainly didn't worry about. And I'm pretty sure that our grain I'm fairly confident we'll win the competition anyway. It doesn't seem to be pinched and having the same stresses as the other plants. So, but I'm a big believer in the Deep Ripper, that one that Mike Fitzgent does at Dalesford. And,
that's the rehabilitator.
That's
right. You might have time to talk about that. Well, thanks. The next question came from Rick Preston. Rick, are you on the line?
No, yes, I am.
Okay. Oh, you are. Rick, do you want to ask your question, or do you want me to read it out?
I think I've got writing it.
Yeah. Go for it.
Oh, sorry, I missed that.
No, read the question. Here you go.
Okay. This is a question to you, John. I have a Hardy boom spray with the diaphragm pump. It has a sealed inbuilt suction filter too fine for compost tea. I was thinking of putting another separate pump, example, a Davy firefighting pump, and running separate lines for spraying compost tea, which I think is a pretty good idea. Do you have any suggestions on what particular pump to use, i.e. a single impeller or double impeller? Do you use any inline filter system putting out compost tea? So, John, far away.
Yeah, it's a good question, Rick, because I've spent a lot of time with our boom spray trying to find the best method and still keep it available for herbicide treatments. So I understand your problem with the diaphragm pump. I do suggest you go with a separate Davy firefighter on the front and plummet out of your tank straight into that. And I reckon a single impeller would be ideal. I don't think you'd need a double impeller. The pressures, you don't need very high pressures to run those flood jets. And so I think you'd get away with a single impeller. When considering the pump, I'd also consider how easy it is to take that housing off and clean the impellers, because invariably there will be the odd little pebble or something that comes through on the compost tee, and if you lose pressure or lose performance of the pump, to be able to get at it and do maintenance is a good consideration, Rick. But in an ideal world, I think, we'd love to go this path as well. We'd have a separate boom spray to do our compost tea applications, simply because when we go to do herbicides where we need to have high accuracy, we find that there is residues that remain in the tank and they do come out into the herbicide lines and they do block filters and cause variation in herbicide applications. So in terms of efficiency, I think the most efficient solution is to have a separate boom, albeit a cheap one, with relatively little investment. I think that's a better solution than trying to exist or coexist with the one boom spray. Does that help at all, Rick?
That's good. I'm pretty confident that I can clean pretty well 100% of residue out of the tank. It's got a big big bung at the bottom. I just open up and it just clears right out.
We found the residue builds up on the entire surface of the tank, not necessarily on the bottom. So all these compost teas and the fungal strands, they stick onto the side of the tank, and that's when they get into the lines. Like, it's not even when you're flushing our Jetstream computer spray has a flushing ability as well, but it's not high pressure enough to get the sides of the tank clean, and that's what causes the residue in the herbicide filter lines in our case. But
Do you use any inline filtering system for your compost tea?
No, but we do use a screen. So what we did was we took a 1,000-litre tank, and I'm up to about my third or fourth model of this screen to try and get production through it. So we run the compost tea over the screen, which takes out the, and when I say a screen, it's only flywire. The gap is only 1 or 2 mil, whatever the flywire size is. We find that that's generous enough to go through the pump and so forth. So what it does is it takes away any of the pebbles or things like that that are really going to cause problems with the pump. And so that's how we filter it prior to putting it into the tank. So it's like a two-stage process, I guess. It comes out of the brewing tank over the screen and then into the boom spray.
Yep.
So that's the only way we could find to efficiently filter it, to get rid of those, the odd pebble or the odd stone or stick or whatever, a bit of straw that does cause problems with spraying.
That's good, thank you.
No, that's fine. I can send photos of those of the screen if that's of any help, but it virtually cut the top out of the 1,000-litre tank and use the entire...
It would be, John, to get send us those, and we can circulate those to the people who would want them. We'd like to do that. I do think that if farmers can afford, not so much afford, but if they can somehow budget ahead and have designated equipment, this if they're still using herbicides, that it's a consideration, because farming with compost teas is the way to go, and it's an expense that has to be looked at. I think you'd agree with that, wouldn't you, John?
Yeah, I can't see us. We won't be stopping, Hugo, like we need to with these variations in the weather that we're keeping that seem to keep coming. I think we need to be able to grow a resilient plant, and I think biological inputs do grow resilient plants, so they're healthier and hopefully a little bit protected from, you know, the likes of frosts and extreme weather such as heat. So I don't know if there's any other inputs that do the same thing, if you know what I mean. So
yeah,
it's a bit airy to play into.
And spending half a day on cleaning out a tank, and then still the possibility of not being really clean is doesn't. Well, when time is very precious, and you, well, I mean, you've got to do things to a time, and you just may not be able to afford half a day here and there to in those crucial times.
Yeah, I think. I agree, and as every other farmer knows, you just try and do the best you can and with what time you've got available, but we've all only got 24 hours in the day, haven't we, and it's the choices that we make that, you know, that affect performance in a large respect. So it is, we do, each of us do have to find the best method or process and try and replicate it each year, don't we?
John, you did mention to me about deep ripping, you borrowed a deep ripper. Can you explain how that worked and maybe a bit about the equipment and what's the most interesting thing, which I'd want to hear from you, is was it worthwhile using it?
Yeah, if I had my time again this year, we would have purchased one. It just had that much difference in production where we trialled it there for a couple of days in autumn last year, and where we ripped direct lines through the paddock, the crop is a 50% better crop. So, and that's all with the same inputs and the same applications of compost tea and so forth. So it's a ripper example of one thing that I believe can have a direct improvement on production in year one, which is a good thing in terms of trying to pay a few bills. But it's a deep ripper. It's about 13 times wide or 3 metres wide, the one that we were using, and it could be pulled with a 140 horsepower tractor with front wheel assist, obviously. So we calculated that we could do about 5 acres an hour, which isn't huge, but it means that we could probably manage 200 or 300 acres a year. But what we believe it does is stores valuable moisture into the soil profile, and the plants can get at it when they require it. And when we had, I think we had 2 inches in 2 weeks back in October or September, October, the plants didn't get waterlogged and they were able to access that moisture later on in the season. So, yeah, it's a good product, and I think I strongly encourage anybody to consider using one. Yep.
Well, that particular one is called a rehabilitator, and it's a bit different to other rippers because it takes less horsepower. Is that true?
That's right. As the design of the tines is different to the other products on the market. It's a bit like a chisel that you use in woodwork, and it's angled forward rather than, you know, vertical, so that it tends to shear the ground along its fractured, you know, layers, and therefore it requires less horsepower per tine. So it really does do a good result. Mm. And I think
is
combining
anyone
that
on the line who's got... Sorry?
No, are you go.
What were you trying to finish saying something?
No, that's fine.
Is there anyone on the line that has got another question for John?
I think there might have only been Rick there. Was there Hugo?
Was there a couple Mark's of others? Dog is there. I think Mark's still there. We will wrap it up here. John, would in summing up, how do you see the way you're farming in the future? What sort of how do you see the future, and what sort of steps are you likely to be taking in the future, like with the biological farming, more of it or less of it? Or can you give us a very brief rundown of how you see the future and the style of farming
Sure.
that you may be directing the farm into?
I don't know that I've been that brief in the past, so I think I've waffled on a bit, but I think we will continue with biological inputs, but I'm not saying we will necessarily cut out of all fertilisers either, chemical fertilisers. I think there is a gradual transitional stage that occurs. I think at the moment I was just working out our 2010 out-of-pocket expenses, and you know, it works out about $67 or $68 a hectare, or roughly $27 an acre. I think we will have to continually look at our out-of-pocket expenses on the farm, particularly when, for instance, oat prices go. Last year, oat price milling was $300 a ton. This year, it's $150. So a 50% reduction in 1 year, and both these have been tough years. So I think the market is changing out there. I think there's a lot of grain being produced, and specifications are continuing to be harder to meet. So as farmers, we're going to be forced into growing better products to meet those specifications. And when you get variations in the weather like we're getting, it makes it very hard to look at conventional practices and maintain production and do it economically. So we do see it as a way of farming sustainably into the future. And what I mean sustainably, I mean exist into the future. So, you know, we've all got neighbours that perhaps seem to be doing it better than us, but they're not necessarily paying our bills. So it's challenging being a farmer, and I see biological farming as being one way of ensuring that we exist in the coming years. So I hope that's brief enough. Here you go.
Yeah. John, I think we'll wind it up here. So I'd like to thank all the people who came online, also thank the Farming Secrets members, and thank anyone who's going to listen to this CD when it's made. But most importantly, John, I want to thank you for sparing this time coming on the line and this preparation beforehand, and also allowing us to film you on the farm, because filming is one thing, having you answer questions is another thing. So I'd just like to thank all the listeners, and thank you, John, for coming online.
Look, it's been my pleasure, and I guess what motivated us to lend our information is not so much being a model for high production, but truly walking the talk. So, you know, it is all experience that we're going through, and if some of our experience can help other farmers become more efficient and economical, then I think we will have done the right thing. So I wish everybody a Merry Christmas, and I look forward to next year, and perhaps when we do another farm walk, we'll have even better results.
Fantastic. Well,
thank you, John.
I'll say goodbye.
Okay. No problem.
Bye-bye.